Strike a Chord podcast, music chit chat with your hosts Valentina Gikowski and Amla Piriakab.
Welcome to Strike a Chord, and with us we got the amazing pianist Ezekiel with us today. As Ezekiel Balseka, yeah?
Yeah, Ezekiel Balseka. Yeah, that's right.
Ezekiel, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming along. I actually first saw you when you were playing with Gitano, with Stefano. In Brunswick for his recital. I think it was a couple of years back now.
Yesterday, 2 years ago. Yeah, two years ago now.
Yeah, I was managing the night.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So that's the first time I saw you, and great, man. It was like one thing I noticed that when you're on stage, you're really in the zone and you're in that world. Is that your approach all the time?
You mean like feeling the stage, like
feeling the stage, and you were doing a. There was a lot of improv, right? And you were you were hitting everything. Amazing.
Yeah. Such interesting question. So I am conceptually probably a jazz musician. And what I'm saying about that is that I was kind of nurtured in a way that I have to be able to make something with what I have. So perhaps I think that my father is also somebody which really enjoyed this kind of music, like being spontaneous, or he has in his conception as well that improvising is important, something positive, something that shouldn't be unnormalized. So from my conception, I have the idea that that is the way. And eventually, I think that through my career, I also found some friends, one of those guys, maybe he's going to listen to this stuff, Jacob Oblesa in Germany. One day I remember that I was coming from a recording in Switzerland with him. We record for a couple of days. Oh no, I don't remember. Was a recording or was something for something? I don't remember. But we were playing something in Switzerland. I was coming back by the train, and he was telling me like, "Hey, I don't conceive music anymore as a practice that is detached from the improvisation approach." And he was really clear in this statement, because he was considering that even if you play classical music, even if you play any type of music that has any sort of, guidance that you have to follow specifically, there is no way that you cannot take your decisions in the moment. Because you are, of course, you are influenced by a lot of things, like, let's say the light, let's say... the familiarity that you have with the musicians, the sound of the room. So you have to improvise. You have to find the ways improvising in order to make it possible. And I really follow that approach. So yeah, just
we've talked about this with Amla many, many times, and you're in the same realm. Well, Amla and I have talked about it, and you're in the same realm as we are, because improvisation is something that's of your character as well. So. And the way you improvise, you're actually giving something from yourself, from your character and how you feel and what you do, you know, and that's a major thing to input into your music, or in a group or a band sort of set up to put in there, because there's a lot of energy flowing, you know?
Yeah. I found that, I don't know, it happens through the years that, if you just want to make the job, you know, especially, let's say, if you are a cruise musician or you are just one of those performers who says, like, hey, I will just go to my, I'm going to the club, I'm going to do my job, and then I go home.
Yeah.
And if you, for some reason, you didn't kind of get in touch with the material and try to kind of, you know, understand from your perspective, if you cannot do that, it doesn't sound real. And people understand that, and you actually feel it. And when I'm saying about being real, it's just a, I don't know why I choose this word. It sounds quite creepy, but I'm saying that you really try to understand what the composer tried to say, right? It's like in classical music or any other practice. you trying to see the behind, the metaphysical thing behind that.
Yeah.
And that is cool. That is really cool. And I appreciate this kind of musicians because they are like trying to do everything for it.
Yeah. And I find that, and I think Amla, you find this as well, that when you're reading charts on stage, you become a bit like that and you forget about what's going on, you know, on the stage, especially if it's a new band or it's, you know, you're there for the first night and you're reading charts and everything. And I think you forget to put that energy in there and to be aware of what's going on sometimes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I guess, well, it's taking that layer away. That's kind of one, I don't want to say the word barrier, but I guess it can be when you're staring at something else, your attention's on that rather than the actual music.
Yeah. And I think, look, it's very good to know your charts and very good to sight read and everything like that. But as Ezekiel, you pointed out, it's about giving that respect to the music as well and putting something there that you're understanding the music. Because sometimes...
You know what? I think that it disappeared. My camera disappeared. You can see me?
No, but...
I don't know why. That seems to be so funny. It's having a lot of surprises.
That's all right. Keep on going. This is live television.
Okay, there we go. My camera is not coming back.
I don't know why.
That's all right. When it comes back...
Well, hopefully it comes back. That should be cool.
with that, just understanding, I think your surroundings, your environment, you know, and the people that you're playing with as well.
Yeah. I have a lot of things to say about those things, but you know what? Perhaps something about music education is really messy, especially when you mentioned this idea about the charts, right?
Yeah.
And I'm also a music educator, so I like talking about these things, right?
Yeah, of course.
I don't think that we can really approach music from that side and try to improvise, let's say.
Mm.
Even if we have like a simple chord or something, we should be able to already listen music behind that. And if it's not happening, then probably that is the moment when you find out a brick wall in front of you, because you feel like, hey, I am trying to somehow figure it out, but of course you cannot do that. I mean, you can try, you can find some scales, but then are going to sound exactly like that, because that is not the main thing, right?
I agree.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
And perhaps that is the job actually of an improviser, like try to find yourself in so many situations, so at some point you collect all the situations and then you just bring them out.
Yeah.
And you can, of course, you can think a lot about a lot of things in stage. I don't recommend that, by the way. Sorry that I interrupted you.
No, yeah, with that thing about things on stage, because when you overthink, then you lose focus and you panic a little bit. And then
Exactly. Perhaps more than thinking on stage, you can feel free and kind of perceive things as free as possible on stage and...
Mm.
Really capture the most of out of it, right? Interacting with your musicians, interacting with your mates. That's great. That's good.
Yeah. There's nothing like that, is there? That chemistry on stage when you're interacting. It's unlike anything else, I think, for myself. When I'm playing, you know, on stage and when that magic is happening and that chemistry is flowing, it's like a drug. You get addicted to it.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah, you know when you was there and when you wasn't. Yeah. It's this feeling, right? That we know.
Yeah, and Amla, you're getting more and more into improv as well. Like you're classically trained.
Well, that's the thing, and I know Ezekiel because he was recommended to me as a teacher to help
That's
up.
Right. You're his student now.
Yeah, and I have to say, the way you think is just so unique, but very, very refreshing. And I've learned so much. And it's just opening up a new world for me. But on that note, when the way you improvise is just insane. Like I can tell that you're just in the zone, but at the same time, it's just magic what's coming out of every single note on the piano, which is leading me into my next question. What got you into the piano? Like, why the piano?
Yeah. Oof. You know, for me, as for me, music is my life, and I have to say, like, fortunately or unfortunately, is my life, because I think that it was a life that I never chose. Yeah, and that question specifically brings me there. I am coming from a family of musicians. My father is a musician. My sister is a musician. My grandfather was a musician. My mother is a doctor, so I had two ways in my family: or becoming a doctor or becoming a musician. Becoming a musician never was never something that I thought like, hey, it is a cool life, because I knew what was the life. I knew exactly what would be the challenge for me in the future. But when I was 15, I was thinking like, hey, I don't really like studying in the high school. Yeah, it sucks. It completely sucks. Yeah, exactly. But I was thinking like, what do I need to do in order to escape? I would really want to escape from this system. I don't want to finish. I don't want to do anything. However, and that is really, really tricky, because I really love physics, for instance. Okay. I really love physics. Actually, something that passionates me a lot is philosophy right now. So I was really natural in science, and let's say, and I don't know, some things like that. Also, I like biology because of my mother and stuff. But you know, there was something in the high school that I didn't like. It was something that made me feel like, hey, when I come here, I am alienating my life.
And that was,
I don't know, actually, this is a good question. I haven't put me in the position again to see what it was.
But as long as it doesn't take you to therapy, you'll be fine.
Exactly. At least I was able to find a solution, though, because I was quite quick into this kind of voice. So I thought, okay, what I have to do? And there was the way to finishing my high school, but in a kind of high school of music. So I entered it wasn't a national conservatory of my country, but it was a conservatory that was international.
Yeah.
And they got a scholarship and stuff. And they asked me what instrument I want to play, and I said piano. Because, of course, when I was a kid, when I was 10 years or something, my father nurtured me to becoming a piano player or an organ player. Yeah, he always says that you decide to become to like Kiss or something. It wasn't like that. He literally gave me probably two options: like, you can study guitar, or you can play piano or organ. So when I was a kid, I used to play organ actually in the National Conservatory there. Yeah, that was the story.
So you went from that education. How did you end up in Stuttgart?
Oh man, it's a lot of steps in order to end up in Stuttgart.
Because coming from high school, you didn't want to be in high school, and then all of a sudden you're in conservatories and you're in Stuttgart. You're at the conservatory in Stuttgart.
The whole story of Stuttgart is way complex. It's so complex.
You probably need another podcast for that.
But at least I can say how I ended up in the European Union, though, because I am from Ecuador, right? So
yes,
I was 15.
Ecuador,
15, 14. I don't remember exactly how age was mine, but I just didn't finish the high school. And actually, I was really lucky that, you know what? I finished online because my mother wanted to make me get something. Exactly. And that was really useful, because at some point of my life, I was like, hey, you know what? Perhaps I'm going to study philosophy in some years, and this title is going to help me in order to study philosophy. Because, yeah, some people doesn't say that, but what happens if you study only music? Well, guys, don't do that stuff. Don't do that shit, actually. I forgot that here I can talk normally. Yeah, don't do that shit. Because if you do something like that, you're not going to have any other possibilities to switch.
Well, this is the mentality of a musician, right? Everyone thinks that they're going to be a popular rock star or a working musician and everything like that, right? And then when it happens, really, and they hit a brick wall, and then you think, what am I going to do to feed myself? And this is why a lot of musicians end up doing all these other sorts of jobs. While they're doing all these other jobs, it's just music in their head, nothing else. They just want to get it over and done with for financial benefit, and then their passion is the music, right? But that becomes complicated.
Yeah, I don't believe in this idea that focusing on something is essential. For me, that idea philosophically has so many gaps that when I hear that, it's like, man, this is ideology. ideology.
You're setting boundaries on yourself.
Yeah.
If you don't see something else out there, and you don't see something further than music, then I think then your music is gonna suffer.
Yes, but okay, that's the thing. I think that probably the idea of being a musician, or not only being a musician, being a doctor, being something that is specific in life, is a bias, because you are being taught that for some reason, because you know, right, that 100 years ago we didn't have to follow this pathway. We were able to be biologists, musicians, travelers, and everything at the same time, and that was cool. When it disappeared? Of course, when the university starts to becoming something.
It disappeared when they implemented the education system.
Exactly.
That's why the education system now is broken, not only here but everywhere. And this is where they put those ideology sort of like guides in. And I think now you're going to start to be a doctor. Now you're going to be an apprentice because you can't do this. Everyone can do anything they want. It's just that. The training, that's just how it is. I was in 19 for many, many years, but I've been playing the guitar since I was 3. I did a whole lot of other sort of jobs, and I learned things from everywhere, good things and bad. But that's the system. Even when I was studying in music, even within that system, things are broken. So what do you do? You know, I mean, I'm like, you're a prime example as well. You went classical and then you went, you know what, I don't know.
Oh, you don't get, I mean, and, you know, I won't go into it like government schools, I'm just whispering that, but teaching at some of these schools, there's really strict systems in place that I don't agree with, and that's the end of that story.
I think that's the point that you're getting through, Ezekiel, because you can't just put yourself in one box.
You can. And especially if you, that's the thing, and it's really fascinating for me how people think that, I don't know, if I want to be becoming a good guitar player, I have to just play guitar and I don't need to know anything about the rest of the world. Man. And then you didn't get the thing, you know? You didn't get the abstract of the whole thing. You need to make a lot of things. You need to learn a lot of things. You need to have a lot of experience in order to become a good guitar player.
Yeah. And not only that, you gotta communicate with people. You gotta play with people. You gotta be out there. Sometimes a lot of musicians can become very solitary in their ways, in their playing, in their practicing 8 hours or 9 hours a day, and then that's all they do. And bang, bang. But yeah, I think it's counterproductive. I think when you play with people and you listen to people, you know, and you listen to not only your idols, but you listen to your peers and you think, this is something that I can learn from, you know. Even like my dad had a saying, my dad was a musician as well, and he had a saying, goes, always listen to, in the music world, listen to everyone that's doing music, good, bad, and otherwise, because you'll learn something from everyone, from good or bad, you learn something from someone, right? But it's not only music, it's life itself, right?
Yeah, but now the word in my mind just flew away, but there is a word for the science which studies the way that we study. I forgot. But yeah, basically following this kind of approach, let's say, is beneficial for you, that let's say you learn something really useful, let's say cooking, or I don't know, something about medicine, biology. Yeah, it's going to influence your art. This is what is going to happen. And actually, that's the richness of making art in general. Yeah. You have to have all those things, and then appears the Eureka. The Eureka doesn't appear from the same spot. It has to appear from a completely different random path, and that is beautiful. And this is why you bring this, you know, I don't know, Debussy, Ravel. You know those guys, or let's say something really far away. I don't know, Bartok. You know, all those guys have completely different interests. They were not only into music.
and that's, it's very important for everyone, not just a musician, for everyone to have a few interests in their lives, because I know a few people that they go to work, they come home, they go to work, they come home. There's no hobby, there's no interest. They get depressed. They tend to have arguments at home. it has to make you happy. You have to be happy. That's the one thing that I say always in life. You have to be happy.
Yeah.
You have to be happy.
Especially.
Sorry, you go.
No, continue.
So you got to be happy, but you also, I guess some people think happy, perhaps they don't know what happy is anymore if they've gotten used to coming home and they're excited to grab a beer out of the fridge and watch some TV. For them, that could be happy, but that's just a distorted view, I guess, of the lifestyle they've been living for this. So they actually don't know what real happiness is for them.
Yeah. And then just to finalize this thing, because it's a nice topic, and I could get here forever.
Just go with the flow.
Exactly. I could say, be careful, musicians, because it could happen the same for us in the opposite way. Like, I've been in situations where I am on tour permanently for at least 6 months or something, and then I feel like, hey, if this is life, I don't want to live this way.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is
from a different perspective.
Yeah, exactly. Because my job is playing, and depending of what part of my story, I had moments in my life when I didn't have any other source of income. That was only playing, and that's really, really challenging.
Mm.
Yeah, because a lot of musicians, I think, that dream with this thing, right? Hey, I just want to play and make my life about the beat. And do it. And,
be careful
and,
what you wish for, yeah?
Exactly. Yeah. And check that out, because it's really demanding. At the end, I remember when I was living that way, I just wanted to have a house. I just wanted to have stability in my life. I want to have a lot of things like that.
you've hit on a very good point there, because I was talking to other people who have permanently been touring and session work and all this and all that. A few of them aren't happy. And I think it removes them from what they really want to do. So where is that point of the music being something that you create and that you love? And that fine line, where is that fine line where it becomes a job?
You got to be careful.
I think it changes for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that you should, in case that you are looking for something like that, you should do it and see how it feels.
Hmm.
Personally, in my case, it happens that I've been working as a musician. The other day, I was making some kind of calculations because somebody asked me the same thing. And I think that my first tour, the first time that I toured through South America was when I was 17.
Oh, wow.
Now I'm 30. So I feel like, hey, this never stopped. Now in Australia, it's the first time that I have, like, finally a bit of stability in my life.
So on that, I'm going to change direction a bit. Why Australia? Did it all come here?
Okay, I'm going to make, like, a little resume about what happened with my life. So I was in Ecuador. I was in this conservatory that has an arrangement with... I don't remember this company, but it's a French organization that promotes music in third countries. You know, French are like that, a bit contradictory. They have both sides, right?
Happily, we don't have any French listeners from this point onwards.
I mean, I'm talking about institutions, right? So I was able to move to Spain, when I was 17 or something. Yeah, I didn't spend much time in Ecuador when I really started to focus on music. So what happened for me was like, okay, if I have to make this thing, I have to make it possible, because my father told me one day, like, okay, boy, if you want to do that stuff, then focus in, because you are not going to have any other chance.
Take it seriously.
Exactly. And if you, I don't know what you understand about music, but if you are not really on the top of the industry, you cannot make a life out of it.
No, definitely.
Yeah, and he was really concerned about what he was saying, and he really pushed me to say, like, hey, you want to make this thing, just go for it, but really focus on that. Otherwise, you are going to return to the system, and I'm not going to help you, because my father actually helped me to go out of the high school. My mother didn't want it. My mother was fine. My mother was angry with me for years.
Your mom's a doctor, so of course she's going to be angry. Yeah. You get out of the education system.
I remember the first time when my mother starts to accept the whole thing was that when she said, okay, he can kind of survive that way. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's it. And it was really when that happened. So yeah, it wasn't really easy. My father, of course, he was already a musician. He had a different perspective. He was like, okay, you know, if you don't do that, you're probably going to feel bad with your life and stuff. And also at the same time, I felt like my father was feeling like, hey, I just want to tell my mom, I don't know, my children becoming a musician. He just wanted that, you know, because he, my father had that kind of mentality. And eventually, actually, I started to question myself. Okay, cool. So I moved to Spain. I moved to Barcelona. I was trying to finish my high school in music, and then I didn't finish, actually. What happened was that I entered directly to the university after a few months, yeah, because I took the audition to avoid those tests, and I was able to pass them. Actually, I don't know, maybe somebody helped me or something, because I was really young when I entered it. Or, I don't know, I had, like, mates which has, like, 30 years old, 35, 40. Some of them were already musicians, which were touring, or I see them like few months, like 3 months, they were in Barcelona and they just disappeared. Or I saw one of them. This guy is Martin Layton. Martin Layton, yeah. This guy is the... Now he plays with a lot of musicians, especially with Jorge Drexler.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's crazy good. Yeah, he plays jazz, he plays everything, it's amazing. And I remember that he only came to the university when he had to play his recital.
Wow.
Yeah, these kind of people. I studied in the Conservatory of Liceo in Barcelona. So these kind of people, yeah, was for me, imagine, I was coming from Ecuador, and then I just suddenly arrived to Spain, and I had the chance, the really good chance to choose what I was going to focus in. So I was studying classical music, and I found this teacher called Albert Bover, which actually is one of my favorite teachers even now. He taught me piano technique, and I know that it sounds like, oh, what is this? Well, there is something called piano technique, which we can talk about that later, because this is a huge topic. It's one of my favorite topics, but yeah.
We're going to have to get you on another episode so you can talk about these subjects all together, because you've got a lot of subjects, man.
yeah. Okay, well, just to say a little insight, piano technique has like three ramifications: the Russian way, the German way, and the French way. And at some point at the end of last century, kind of something happened in the US and in the whole world, and now we are finally having more resources.
Yeah.
In order to teach piano. Yeah, if one of you is struggling playing piano, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised, because there's not many literature. And if there is literature, it's not free at the moment. Unfortunately, I am one of the few people who can say that, hey, I have a piano technique education. So you can see it is.
You should probably write something and put something together if you haven't already.
I haven't yet, but I am planning to do it. Well, probably at the end of the interview, I can talk with you about something. Connected with that. Anyways, sure. So let's continue with my resume. So after going to Spain, I lived the economic crisis in Spain. Yeah, you know. I was really happy in Spain. I was able to hang out with musicians like Jorge Rossi, you know, the drummer of Brad Meldo.
Yeah.
In the 90s. He still lives in Europe, so that was cool. I had like such a great community of musicians, and all of them were kind of just musicians, so it's some kind of, for me, was naturally going to the jazz world.
But Barcelona was the center for that, musicians, for artists.
Barcelona was the center.
It probably still is, but then in the 90s and early 2000s, it was really the place to be, you know? So much is happening just out on the streets. In an artist's life, whether it's a musician or painter or sculptor, whatever, it's just a center. I mean, Picasso was there nearly all his life, so they're in France. So yeah, it's an electrifying city. I've been there, so I know what it's like.
Yeah, it is really cool. But I don't remember which year the economic crisis hits me really bad, and I thought like, okay, I can live this way, like playing a lot of gigs and not earning much money. Like, I remember the worst gig, or one of the worst gigs, was like when I had to play for 2-3 sets and then getting 50 euros.
Wow, man, that was rough. Was it euros then, or was it pesetas?
No, euros.
It was euros.
Did you say five, how many sets?
50 euros.
Oh, no.
Three sets. Three or four
sets did you play?
Three sets, between two and three sets. Yeah, yeah, that was insane. Oh, that was insane. Yeah, and Barcelona was already entering this inflation that haven't stopped since then. And I had a Polish girlfriend at that moment because I made my Erasmus in Poland. I was one of the first students from my university who moved to Poland for one semester. And then I was like fascinated because in Poland for me was so easy to make everything. I was able to play quite a lot. I was able to play to meet so many really interesting people. Mm. And when I finished my career and I was for a few months in Barcelona, I thought, hey, I will just move to the north. And here is when it starts the whole journey into Germany. It's why I say that it's a whole thing.
Okay. So Barcelona was like a stepping stone.
Yeah. I mean, it's the place where I actually spent a huge part of my life, like 6 or 7 years. But yeah, I was in love with this place. And actually, I still think that if I go to Barcelona, I find family there because some of my friends, another foreigners or natives from there, they're still living there and they are nurturing their families, you know.
Better themselves there. They've settled there. That's it.
Yeah, they still are there and I have family there, you know.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I had this feeling that I feel like, oh man, my life is going to be like that, like struggling with money. Yeah, no, I was really thinking that way. You know, it's the moment when you think like, okay, it's cool. Like I got a lot of knowledge and stuff, but fuck it out. I just want to have a normal life.
Yeah.
But that's how it is with a lot of musicians, right?
And they
learn to accept it. It's like we're stupid. We just learn to accept it at one stage of our lives that we're running on nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
We're running on passion.
Yeah. No, I am with you completely. I moved to Poland. Oh man, and Poland, such a journey. I still like Poland.
Something not quite right happened in Poland.
Yeah, I mean, politically, I had a lot of crashes. You know how is Poland, right? Politically, you both know more or less what's happening in Poland.
I don't know what's happened in the past.
But also in the last years, something that I don't know, just to talk a few things about the place. It's a good place. Yeah, it's not bad. But women actually are losing some rights right now. They cannot abort anymore. Before they were able to abort. Now they can't. You know these things. It's like you feel like something's happening in Poland. A lot of countries are fighting in order to get the chance to abort.
But it's not just Poland.
Yeah,
I'll give you this.
Yeah,
it's everyone's fighting to just quickly. Won't delve into too much politics because I'm not a fan of politics. But everyone's fighting to get into the EU, and to get into the EU, they need guidelines, and that's what Poland is. That's what's happening with Poland. Anyway.
So. Oh, so for any, I feel really weird sometimes. Even though I have still friends and it's great, yeah, I love Polish food. It's one of my favorite foods ever.
It's a different lifestyle. That Eastern Bloc of Europe is a different lifestyle, and you're really coming from Ecuador, where it's totally different, right? So you're coming from there, Barcelona, they still speak Spanish. They still have, you know. Then you go to Poland. It's just polar opposite. And you think, God.
I lived there for 2 years. Yeah, I lived there for 2 years. So it wasn't something that I was just going to say, like, hey, I just want to move out. But the cool thing was that when I was playing in Poland, I found this guy, Hannes Scholster, I don't remember, a good friend of mine. And he told me, bro, you have to, again, the camera. Bye-bye.
That's all right. You'll come back.
And he said, like, bro, you have to change your life, because he saw me, you know, in this moment when I was feeling like I don't feel good anymore here. And he told me, you know what, come to Germany. There's this guy who knows, and there is one place in Stuttgart. If you pass the exam or something, you're going to just get there. And he was saying this phrase like, hey, you just want to get there. In a really chill way, but of course wasn't like that. When I arrived there, like, I don't know how many piano players were applying for that stuff all over the world. So I was like, what am I doing in my life? I don't even have money to come to Germany. And at the same time, I was doing some auditions all over Europe. I made some auditions in the Netherlands. Where it was also? I think that was Austria. I forgot the name of this place, but there's a nice university. And another place I forgot. Also, I think that was France, yeah, and Germany. But I don't know why. I think that because of my friend Johannes, I kind of felt that, hey, it could be cool to come here. Something about that, I don't know. At the same time, I was really into the Netherlands, but something happened with me with a scholarship. You know what? I don't like making business with Dutch people now. Because actually,
you're traumatized by something that's happened.
Yeah. So something that happened was that I received actually a scholarship to study in the Netherlands, and the guys, I think that they were kind of testing me. They said like, bro, we're going to send you the money one day before you start studying. I was like, man, I don't know if I can do this thing. Are you going serious or not? So I already signed a contract or something, but they really were testing me. They went to check like how many days I was going to hold the whole thing. And at some point, I was like, hey man, these guys in Germany, they are so specific. They just offered me a scholarship straight ahead. They gave me some insights. They gave me some dates, and everything seems to run perfectly.
fell into place.
Exactly. So I said, disclaimer alert, yeah, I passed the audition in Stuttgart, so yeah, I entered the university there. Yeah.
So, was it after Stuttgart that you came to Australia, or how did you make that decision? Because we're on the other side of the world here, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why you came here.
In Germany, I live in several cities as well. Like, one of them was also Berlin. Actually, before coming here, I was living in Berlin. Well, what happened actually was that Berlin is cool until you have a lockdown, until you have something like the COVID-19. Then it's not cool.
We were worse than them, right?
Yeah, but I didn't like much German in general during that time. And also something that happened, and that is when I'm going to connect with Australia, is that my younger sister got cancer. And you know, I've been fighting with myself because at that moment, I was already living in the north for 5 years or maybe 6 years. And I was feeling these winters over and over, and I started to feel tired about the snow. Yeah, I don't romanticize snow. I don't like snow. Exactly, will be clear. A lot of people say that.
I don't like the winter either, then, and I'm in Australia.
I like to go to the snow. Okay, that is cool until you go to Poland. I don't know, I used to live in Krakow, and you get a winter with minus 30 degrees. That is a real deal. Yeah, that is a real deal. So the snow appears sometimes, but that is not something that really appears, you know? It just feels weird. I don't like that. I feel, right now my conception is like, yeah, I am a Saudi citizen or something. I like the south part of the world in general.
You like the heat. You like the sun.
Yeah, exactly. I like the sun. I really like this. I love the sun. And you probably, where are you from, by the way?
Hey. I'm born in Australia, but I have Macedonian heritage.
Okay, so then you understand the whole thing.
I haven't lived there. My wife has lived there up until we got married, because she's from there, and she knows about those big winters, about the minus 20 and minus 30 and the 2-3 meters of snow. But yeah, I wouldn't want
to. Yeah, no, it's not great.
I'm not used to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that when the music scene was removed from that experience, I didn't feel like I was there.
There was nothing left.
Yeah, no. So I got a job, and I was able to travel actually to Ecuador.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great because I was able to see my family, see my sister. And at the very end, my sister survived, right? But I remember that when I was talking with her, she was telling me like, she was telling me a lot of cool things like, bro, what are you doing with your life? Like, why you live where you live? Why you do?
Why don't you be a doctor?
Yeah, actually, she studied medicine.
Really?
Yeah. Anyways, I was thinking like, I don't know. I don't really know what I'm doing anymore with my life. And I had that feeling until, yeah, until, you know what, until the last holiday that I have in Asia that was like 1 month ago. Just something like that. I had this feeling like I didn't know what I was doing with my life. And I will, I'm going to go there. So, anyways, a friend of mine in Berlin, his name is Jack, by the way. Jack, how are you doing? Hopefully everything is cool there with the winter. He told me, bro, I'm coming from Melbourne. You know, this, there's this place in Australia that's called Melbourne, that looks similar to here to me. But the cool thing is that you will have sound, something like that. Because, you know, at that moment, I was already planning my trip to Europe again. I was going back. I had an apartment there. I had relationships. I had everything there, you know. I had my clothes.
You were settled.
Yeah, I was settled there. And this guy told me, like, you know, before coming here, go there for some months or some weeks. Just enjoy life, you know. You've been working quite a lot.
Like a holiday.
Yeah, it was really a holiday. And yeah, I was just applied for a visa, and I got the visa in 1 week. And in kind of like 2 weeks, I was traveling to Australia. So for me, it was like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'm going to have this trip. I'm going to enjoy my life for a moment. I'm going to enjoy the sun. In Ecuador, I already understand that, yeah, sun is important for me. Of course, Ecuador, come on. I was also traveling to the Amazonas, and a lot of cool stuff happens there. The Ecuador topic is a whole thing because, you know, it happens with me, for me, so many stuff there, so many stuff that I'm still working on. But anyways, yeah, I came to Australia, and I thought, man, it feels cool here. And also another thing that I really liked was that, as, I don't know, in Europe, as I've been playing piano for a while, a lot of people, I think, that kind of categorize me in one specific spot. They said, yeah, I play jazz. I am a jazz musician that plays that way. I also, my trio in Germany, the Siki Baseka Trio, also was nominated for a Jazz Ahead. And it's why that also it was even worse, you know. We were the guys which makes this way. We play this way. And I really didn't like that feeling anymore after some years. And when I came to Australia, nobody knew about me. So I felt like so refreshing. It's so refreshing. I like it. I can do whatever I want. And something that people doesn't know, and that I'm going to say here, is that I didn't play keyboards before coming here.
Just piano.
Yeah, you only used to play piano.
Man, oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, because when I saw you, you were playing the Nord.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't have to play keyboards, notes, or something. For me, actually, it was something that I couldn't even conceive. Like, it was like, why I have to play a Nord? In Europe, it's so easy for me to find an Ambra piano or a grand piano. And yeah, it was
not that easy here.
Yeah.
Especially when playing in the venues where we play.
Exactly.
But compact is better. Even if it's even better if you can find an accordion and bring it yourself.
No, for me, I can say about that. But that for me was cool. It was so refreshing. So I started making these projects like Matt Gamble. That is my trio here in Australia.
I love that. I want to see you guys live. I've seen. So cool.
When are you going to release this podcast?
Tuesday.
Next week.
Tuesday. Okay, no, you missed the concert of Matt Gamble then. Because the next concert of Matt Gamble is this Friday at 3:03. And this is the farewell of Nana. Well, it's a farewell, some kind of. It's cool that I'm saying this thing now because it's not really a farewell. But
this
we are
Friday at 3:03, yeah?
This Friday at 3:03.
Oh, I'm writing that down.
Oh, my camera is back. There we go.
There you go.
They had to announce the gig, and now you're back on the screen.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I can announce the gig, but this gig is going to happen this week, and this is going to release next week, right?
Yeah.
Have you got another gig coming up after that?
With Matt Gamble, no. We just something cool with Matt Gamble is that we just record our first EP this last weekend.
Awesome.
At Choi Productions. It was cool. I have to say that it's going to be a great EP. No, for real. I've been saying that the whole week, but I got really surprised about how these guys recorded. It's not that I didn't think that you were going to make a good job, but they make a really good job, you know?
When is it released? When is it going to be released?
It's a good question. We're working in it. We cannot say anything yet, you know?
Okay.
But it's going to be released soon. I can only say that.
Okay.
So yeah, after Matt Gamble, the Matt Gamble concert, I have a concert with other bands though. I think I have to play at Workers Club with Nevera Kessing.
Workers Club, yeah, one of the Workers Club.
Yeah. And then on the 15th, also we're going to play with My Jacta, another project, on the 15th of March. In Norcode. Yeah, in Norcode for something, some, I don't know, I'm not really. I received the gig yesterday. But I like My Jacta. I don't know if you know about my project, My Jacta, with Sara de la Cerda. We play Ecuadorian music, and that is so cool for me as well. Because, you know, I haven't played Ecuadorian music in my life. I always say the same thing, because it's true. Sara is my teacher. She's been...
But you're always learning from people. You know, whether teachers or not, you're always learning from people. Everyone's a teacher.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But for real, she introduced me in this Ecuadorian music way. I've been studying only classical music, jazz, or any other music, you know, actually African music and stuff like that, but never focused on the music of my country. And once we start playing this kind of stuff, for me, it felt so natural. It was the music that actually my grandfather used to play. Well, and I never went. Yeah, it was great. So now it's like.
And that's the other thing that happens. You go all around the world, right? And physically and musically. And then you somehow come back to where you started and your roots, you know? And this is where you begin to appreciate it more.
Yeah, you know, Ecuador is really. It's a really conflicted country. I mean, right now everybody knows about that. Because we have severe problems in Ecuador. Severe problems is crazy. But when I say a conflicted country, it's like about our origins.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So being a mixed race in Ecuador is tough. It's really tough because you are not part of the indigenous community and you are not part of the, let's say, more Hispanic community or something. And you feel like you don't fit anywhere.
Look, right. I'm gonna tell you something. I feel the same way here, even though I'm born, bred here.
Oh, I'm sure you feel that way.
And when I go to Macedonia, I'm foreign there.
I'm sure. You feel
I'm
that
a
way.
Tourist everywhere.
I'm sure you feel that way.
The way I say myself is a citizen of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you want to talk about politics, but. I've been experiencing the political system in Australia now for a while, and I'm sure you feel that way.
I think you feel the same way too. Especially when you go back to Perth.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's another topic. That's a massive topic. But yeah, like I never even when I go back to Malaysia, that's my part of my roots. They say in Malay, "What is she? Not who is she? What is she?" Because I don't look like one particular. Race, I guess, but yeah, I guess we can all relate.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That is the unique thing that I can say is really particular from Ecuador. The thing is that being a mixed race in Ecuador is not new. Okay, it already has more than 100 years. So our identity is being kind of been researched for a while. So because we don't know really how to approach. Our traditions, our customs, a lot of things, you know, and there are a lot of, let's say, mixed race stuff going on, and I can relate with that stuff, but it's still a bit at the beginning of something, especially, and that is the thing, it was because a lot of mixed race communities try to avoid this indigenous part. They didn't try to show it up. And that was a mistake. That was a mistake. A huge mistake. And I think that when I was maybe 15, 14, years old, is when I noticed that there were political movements that were really bringing up this indigenous thing. However, of course, they found the obvious thing. They found that they are not indigenous. Sure. So they cannot really completely relate with that stuff, which is really funny.
See, this is the thing. And I think the way I see it all the time is I don't see the person as a race. I see the person as a person. And that's how I see it. Maybe because I'm brought up here. I don't know. My father had a very thing about not caring about what race and what people are. If you're a good person, you're a good person. If you're an asshole, well, you're an asshole. It doesn't matter what race you are, right? And I think you have to be like that with people, individuals. Some people have that mindset of, you know, I'm part of this race, or I am this, or I am that. But in the end, we're all human, right? We're all part of the same species.
That is everything connected with my idea of what is Ecuadorian music and what feels like being Ecuadorian. So what I can say about Ecuador is that I don't know who is in Australia specifically with these things. Maybe you share or not, I don't know. Some particular customs or something. But even though, let's say, if we don't speak the same languages, because yeah, in the mountains where I'm from, let's say the community of my grandmother used to speak Quechua. Mm-hmm. They are, my mother speaks Quechua, so we have this Quechua influence that is really heavy. But in the Amazonia, you have, I don't know, 50 languages. Then we have also a Black community. That is not a Black community. Actually, they already there in Ecuador for more than 200 years. So they have their own territory. They have their own language. They have the way to speak Spanish. So we kind of connect for Spanish. Yeah, we have some dialects. We have also the insular region that is basically the Galapagos Islands. So it is really diverse at a point that sometimes it's really difficult for us to say, like, hey, what is being Ecuadorian? Because it is, it's weird. But I can say that there are a few things that now I finally connect. So one of those things is the music. Hmm. You know, and that is really cool because it's like in Brazil, I think. I think the Brazilians has a similar condition. And yeah, the music really connects us, like, I don't know, anything. I think that when we are kind of feel like a bit depressed, we feel like, hey, in life nothing's going cool, or we have problems with love. Oh, that's the thing, man. We have problems with love. We go to these places, to those bars, and we listen to this kind of music that just make it even worse. But yeah. it's a process, you know. You go there, you want to touch the hole, and then the next day you feel kind of great.
Yeah, you get it all washed out of your system.
You need to have those horrible songs in order to feel better. And I think that that process makes us Ecuadorian. Another thing that makes Ecuadorian is, like, we really appreciate the Galapagos Islands, let's say. We understand the meaningful of those things because of our program of education, yeah. Or the ayahuasca, I don't know.
Yeah.
Most of Ecuadorians, when they have some moment in their lives, they say, like, hey, I have to go to the Amazonia to experience the ayahuasca with a shaman.
And that, I think that experience in itself is going to stick with you for the whole life.
and that's cool as well because we are sharing something. So, you know,
things are very spiritual.
Yeah, exactly. So these few things starts to create for me, or already create, the view of my current view of what is an Ecuadorian. And that is really cool. When I was young, there wasn't something like that. Actually, there was much division. There were a lot of weird things, man. Now I'm glad with how it's going on. Even though of all the corruption things and the narcotraffic stuff that, you know, that is really crazy.
At the end of the day, you know, I think we sometimes overlook what we have, and we have to be grateful for what we have and where we are. You know, sometimes we overlook it because we look into the future and we have to be here, be there, we have to do this, we have to do that, we have to save for this or save for that, or, you know, and then we lose focus of where we are. Yeah. Be grateful for what you have now and where you are now, because tomorrow or in 5 minutes' time, we don't know what can happen. You can get hit by an asteroid.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that it's cool to formulate these questions with you. Like, it's cool that you know at least what are your traditions or things like that. Even though, because, you know, I don't know when it happened, but in Europe, maybe because I'm also moved there really young, at some point, I forgot about a lot of things. Mm. You know what I'm talking about? Like, this moment when you say, like, hey, perhaps I'm coming from there, but doesn't resonate with me anymore. Mm. And doesn't have to, because, of course, you would change. And it's good.
Yeah, of course.
When you want to put everything together, and when you think about your life, let's say, with one of those questions that my sister made, like, why do you do those things? Why you live where you live?
Yeah.
And then all those ideas has to connect, and you have to think about your past, and you have to think about what you would like. Not your future, because the future is impossible, but it's when you have to make all these kind of decisions.
I get you. You don't have to connect. It just happens.
No, you don't have. Exactly.
You don't have to connect. It just happens. I'm here because I'm here. Don't know why. Well, there is probably somewhere, you know, there is probably why, but I'm tired to think about that.
Yeah.
But that's why it's important to here now, what I've got now, where I am now. If, yeah. it, you know, if things come up, you know, like this podcast, we want to know a bit about your history. This is why we ask. But that's where you start to think and you think, oh, shit. When did it all happen? Why did it all happen? And you start to connect the dots. And you, in some situations, you don't need to connect because things just happen.
Yeah, right? For sure.
And it's no bother in thinking about that because you delve into the past and all that. And
yeah. That's the time. I would say that the answer for all these questions was my Jacta. And actually, most people doesn't know that, but my Jacta, I mean, Jacta is a word in Quechua. Quechua, for those who doesn't know as well, is a dialect from the Quechua. So Quechua is a dialect from the Quechua, if you know the Inca Empire.
Yeah.
Well, we were never Incas, actually. We were from a tribe called Quitus. So... when the Spanish invasion arrived, actually we have different problems because we were already fighting against the Incas.
All you needed is another one to come in and join in. Exactly. That's all you guys needed.
So I was like, Jesus, the game is happening. We cannot go out of it. And actually history of Echo is kind of like that. We are surrounded by countries. And
it was always conflicted. Always with conflict.
So
like Macedonia.
Yeah, so my Jacta, exactly. So Jacta basically means home. So it's like our imaginary home that we have in our minds, you know, where we can stay and we can feel secure for a moment, or we can rest for a moment, you know.
We can rest. Take five.
Exactly. We can rest in this song, and that is cool. That is for me my Jacta.
Yeah.
That's why for me it's so representative though, and I can suggest you to come to listen to my Jacta on the 15th of March.
I will. On the 15th of March.
15th of March. I think that is in Norcod. I don't know exactly the place, but it will be a festival or something.
Well, I'm going to see, I'm going to catch it on your socials, right? So, well, definitely want to come. So,
Man. Definitely.
But thank you so much. Thank you, Ezekiel. It's been a pleasure. It's been a real big, you know, outside of the box journey, you know? coming from all that, you know, all around the globe, really. You know, I think you've been to all the continents, I think.
Yeah.
Except Africa.
Yeah. That's true. No, that is true. I also been in the Middle East. I had a chance to play in the Middle East, in Asia, Australia, Europe. I know Europe quite a lot because I played a lot in Europe. In America, I've been in the US. I haven't played much in the US. But South America, yeah. I tour into America. Yeah.
Good on you, man. And look, it's a pleasure to have you on, and it's a pleasure to have you in Melbourne, to have a musician like yourself, an artist like yourself in Melbourne, and someone who has a very broad outlook. Not only on music itself, but on life itself. And I think we should appreciate people like you more here in Melbourne and have you perform more and give your insight, give your experience, your stage presence and your experience of music that, you know, that sort of encompasses your whole life. You know, this is what is very important to people here and the industry here, because this face of the industry is struggling, right? But I think it's very important for people here to see that people like yourself go on stage, and it's not just a performance. It's a culmination of your life's work, right? For every performance, because every performance is different, you know.
Yeah, I could say, like, guys, we play how we live.
Yeah.
And that's completely
And you wouldn't have it any other way. Look, it's been a pleasure, Ezekiel, and I'm sure we're going to have you back on the podcast later on as well. We'd like to have you physically in.
Yeah. Okay.
And maybe have a bit of a jam at the end of the podcast.
That could be fun, yeah. I'm always up to.
You know? But look, thank you once again. And it's been a pleasure. Amla, as always, thank you.
Thank you, Amla. It's been really interesting. It's been nice to listen to your stories. There's so much more we to hear as well. So
I think Ezekiel, if you're up to it, we have like a podcast panel every. I think once a month. We're gonna be doing it once a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, where we have a few musicians in or a few people from the industry in and have a chat. About, we have a conversation and just mixed chat. We'd love to have you in one of them as well, because I think you've got a lot to add. And you might find that there's conversation. The conversation goes even bigger with more people. So we'll love to have you on. And also, please let us know about your EP as well.
Sure.
And we'll do as much as we can to get it out there. And, you know, probably have you on again to promote
that
it.
Cool. That could be cool. Thank you, guys. Thank you for your support.
Thank you once again. Just another word from our sponsors, Kaker Tips as well. And Music Pro Services, if you want music production and everything like that. So thanks once again, and we'll definitely get you on again.
Awesome. Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Ciao.
The Strike Accord Podcast, presented to you by ValentinoFlamenco.com and AmlaMusic.com.